Hey everyone, Josh here. Quick question for you. Do you like coffee? Even more important question, do you like fresh coffee? Coffee that's roasted to order and doesn't taste like the bottom of your kitchen oven? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you need to head over to MaquanoCoffee.com and get yourself some of the best coffee there is to get. Whether you like the light roast or the dark roast, or you're feeling a little whimsical and you want to get that sample pack, Maquano Coffee Roasters has everything you need. And just when you thought this couldn't get any sweeter, make sure to use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. Do yourself a favor and stop drinking bad coffee, because you know what? Life's too short for that. Head on over to MaquanoCoffee.com and use the promo code REFORMATORY to get 20% off all bagged coffee. You will not regret it. Thanks, and now on to the show.
What do you got for me?
What's wrong with you people?
I got nothing for you.
What's wrong with you?
Benediction right there. That was so good.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome to The Reformatory, the podcast for the local church and by the local church, and we are your local churchmen. My name is Josh, and as always, I'm here with the man that needeth no introduction, the legend in his own right, Captain Jack Barry. Jack, my friend, how are you? It's good to see you. It's been not actually too long. I had the opportunity to actually see you recently. Mm-hmm. That was a rare treat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We partook of expensive cigars.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't boutique. It was straight up expensive, people.
Yes. Yeah. And before people are like, get all weird right now, it was birthday money.
True.
That
from
Jack
you
was given. Mm-hmm. Because we're buds and we do that. We still give each other presents. Right? It's like when you're like 12 and you like invite your friends over for your birthday party. It's just the adult version of that. And the stipulation was that half of the money had to go to a stick that you would not buy yourself. And Jack succeeded in that. I think you ended up getting a Padron.
A Padron Black Maduro.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the length was like a Torpedo Toro or something like that. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Very smooth. Very smooth. Very good.
Yeah.
Would not smoke that as my daily smoker.
Yeah. No. That's something that the Arnold Schwarzeneggers and Michael Jordans are smoking as their dailies. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
Not, not that bougie.
No.
But Jack, my friend, how are you? How's the week? How was the Lord's Day?
Lord's Day was good. We installed another elder
nice.
In our church. That was good. Half of our pastorate is now Canadian. So,
uh-oh.
Trade wars be happening.
Oh, no.
No, yeah, I'm just joking.
I was going to say, like, are they tariffing their sermons? Like,
that would be awesome. No, they're not. They're not doing that.
That's really good.
So, we had that. Went over to our friend's house to have some lunch with them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was overall good Lord's Day.
That's awesome.
Nothing too out of the normal, but yeah having an extra elder is always needed.
Yeah,
I think especially with like I mean, depending upon, I don't know I can't remember what size church you guys are at, but we're like 100 members, but like we can have like 100 to 125 members. I'm trying to remember the exact count.
Sure.
But then we have like up to 200, like the rest of that is like up to 200 in attendees.
Yeah.
And yeah, just needing more support, help.
Yeah.
There.
Well, and that brings up an interesting topic, and one that I think we've talked about before, but it's worth bringing up is, and I was actually just having this conversation with somebody. I can't remember. It might have come up in the young adults group as a question. I think we were talking about healthy churches. Okay. And the question came up, how do you effectively shepherd, but also, because this was in the context that it was in, how do you effectively be a member and get to know like your pastors and things like that in a large church?
Mm.
And I brought up the point, and maybe this is the catapult into the discussion, that generally, I'm not going to say in every single case, but generally, the larger a church becomes, the more potential for unhealthy habits to form.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. It's harder. Like it's what I will say just generally, because this is a fact. The larger a church becomes, the harder it is to shepherd effectively. Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. And that has been something that especially in the local church context that I found myself, where it's a smaller local church, and those have been primarily the churches that I have had the blessing to either pastor or be a part of, you really get like that really comes true when you start to dig into the life of the church, the community of the church. And then I'll visit these other churches for like conferences or whatever, you know, have you. There's a church in Bothell used to host counseling conferences every year. Mm-hmm. And every time I would go there, I was just kind of just like jaw to the ground with how huge it is. Like, it's
is that campus. Overlake?
No, it wasn't Overlake. It was, no, it Overlake's was, insane. It was Overlook's nuts, dude. Yeah. No, it was Canyon Hills.
Okay.
Canyon Hills. So I was friends with the counseling pastor there. Incredible dude. Like, loves Jesus, loves people, like awesome, a really great pastor, right? But that'd be something that we would talk about sometimes, is just the difficulty with effectively shepherding a church of, you know, 4,000 people. I would maintain, and maybe this is this is where we can start the convo. All right, I'm gonna start us hot. And then you can either turn us up or turn us down, depending on how your Monday was, right? I would maintain that it's not possible to effectively shepherd a church the way that they should be shepherded when you get over, I don't know, dude. Like, I don't want to put a hard and fast number on it, but I know for sure 3,000 or 4,000 is like, that's way over my number if I'm going to draw a line. your thoughts, Jack.
Yeah, I think to just play devil's advocate with you, Josh, I think it could be possible with way more elders.
Okay.
You would have to commission like a lot
many,
of elders.
How many? Dude. How many for a church of, okay, again, this is fun. For a church of 3,000 people, how many elders?
I'm pulling out my calculator.
Do you need, you know, because you start, I mean, it's like the classroom thing, right? Like, how many students to a teacher?
Yeah.
Do you start to lose your effectiveness as a teacher, right?
Yeah.
Obviously not a one-to-one comparison, but it's kind of the same discussion, is how many members to an elder till you start to lose your ability to keep tabs on people, see how they're doing. People start coming, slipping in, slipping out. I do think that there's ways to do it. But, dude, that would have to be a massive elder team.
Yeah, I mean, if you're just talking four elders that I have right now per 125 people.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, dude, that's like, I don't know. I'm trying to do the math in my head. That has to be like upwards to like 100 elders or something, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it has to be like that. So what you're talking about is like, so I say it in that sense, but let's be honest. Here's the reality of it.
Yeah.
No church is going to do that, right?
No.
No church has that. No church is going to take on the responsibility to commission that many elders.
Right.
Unless they're lay elders who are like not on salary.
But at that point, again, like, yes, that is something you can do. But then at that point, you are running into the problem of those lay elders have full-time jobs, right?
Yeah, like unless they're retired.
Yeah, sure.
Unless you're hitting up the retired population of people.
Hitting up the retired demographic.
So, okay, like, so the guy who we did install is retired.
Yeah.
And he was a pastor before at another church before kind of coming to our church during COVID time.
Yeah.
Where instability happened. And so, yeah, sure. I mean, we've talked about this too when I went to seminary. I think that my seminary was very much of the opinion that you cannot effectively disciple people when you have 4,000 members.
Yeah.
At that point. Because at that point, you have people who are just coming to come. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've seen this at Mars Hill a lot, especially when churches went independent still. People were just coming, they'll show up and they'll just sit in the pew and really have no other interaction with you mm-hmm. on a Lord's Day other than that, maybe. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, mm-hmm. where you and I would probably say, like, what are you getting out of that? How are you seeking to be discipled? How are you seeking to be a part of church life when you're just having that consumer drive-by mentality?
Right.
So in one sense it could be done, but you would have to have, this is kind of like, you know, our kind of podluck talks. If I had a, you know, unlimited amount of resources mm-hmm. and could be able to do whatever I wanted, sure, you could do that. But that just doesn't like shake out how we see it to shake out, because right. it usually a lot of people consolidate power around a handful of people usually.
Yeah.
And then on top of it, I started to see this too in the Mars Hill world, plus in the independent, when all the Mars Hill churches went independent, is you start to delineate pastoral tasks down to deacons, which I don't think deacons are equipped to do.
Yep. Yeah, that's a fantastic point.
You make deacons the intermediaries, which deacons are not intermediaries. Like, let's get this straight. Biblically, deacons are not intermediaries to the pastors, to the elders.
Yeah.
Deacons are specifically there to help in the service of the church.
Yeah.
Or help in that way. Like, they are mm-hmm. gifted in that way to execute that in the church. They're not there to be pastor juniors or associate pastors or pastors in training.
Yeah.
They're there primarily to help out.
The role of deacon, contrary to some belief, the role of deacon is not like the step up to pastoral ministry.
Yeah,
they are two separate offices with separate giftings that serve the church in separate but equal ways, right?
Yeah.
So it's not a junior manager, right? That like, you know, one day you'll have your own store.
Assistant to the assistant manager.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's not like an ASM at Lowe's. Be like, we're priming you to be your own store manager one day. You're going to have your own church, right?
No. Deacons should not be they shouldn't be encouraged that way.
Yeah, that should not be the expectation.
Yeah. So, yeah, when I was in seminary, we had a lot of people had the primary opinion that if you're in a just even 1,000+ member church, it's going to be exponentially difficult to disciple those people. And I think what we're experiencing, I think it's coming back to where a lot more people are starting to appreciate. I know when I left the church that I was at to go to a smaller church, at least a church in which we have one service, mm-hmm. we're gathered all together mm-hmm. in one auditorium room sanctuary.
Yep.
And we could all see each other. That's very scalable.
Yeah.
Versus 2-3 service times at that point, then here I'll throw a wrench into this conversation even more. If you have 2 or more service times, are you necessarily now 2 churches?
See, and here's the thing, right? And that's part of the discussion. I'll show my 9 Marxism a little bit.
Yeah.
And do it. Say, yeah, effectively
yeah.
effectively you are. Mm-hmm. Now, Because what we mean by that is you, the things that you are losing by having multiple services. And I understand, again, I understand the reasons churches do them. I'm not going to come out and say that you're in sin for doing them. It's not to that level, but I think that you're missing out some really, really important things when you split the services up like that. And one of the primary, things that is the community life of worshiping together and being part of each other's lives. Because what ends up happening, and you can't help this, this is just what happens. You have your first service people, and you have your second service people, right? And unless there is an incredible amount of intentionality, those demographics of people will hardly cross paths in the way that they should in the local church on the Lord's Day.
Yeah.
Right? The local church is meant to be a place where you are known, right? You are observed, you are seen, there's accountability, there's community, and you seek to do that with other people as well. And one of the best things about the Lord's Day is that you get to worship with the people that you are doing life with, that you're in community with. And when you split the services up because of size, right? Mm-hmm. Or let's say an even worse reason to split it up, style preferences. Mm-hmm. People will have a traditional service early and a contemporary service a little later. I'll be honest, we might be drifting into potluck territory here. That drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Drives me absolutely insane when I hear that, because then what are you doing? You're making church preferential. Mm-hmm. You're making the Lord's Day something that you can pick and choose like items on a menu.
Yeah.
Right? That's not what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's not about us. It's not about our preferences. It's not about what style of music you like. It's not about the style of preaching you like. It's about worshiping the Lord, right? And placing our preferences under the foot of the cross, because worshiping Christ is more important. So, again, small rant, but it's extremely difficult, not just to shepherd effectively when it comes to large churches, because of the intentionality that's supposed to be there in shepherding. You just can't, you don't have that much time, right? Like Jack said, it would take massive amount of elders. Churches, by and large, don't do that. Some churches try to get around that issue by small group ministries. And look, I'm a fan of small groups, have been forever. I enjoy small groups. I think they're extremely valuable. They're not a substitute for godly shepherding.
Yeah.
They can aid godly shepherding as they should, right? Yeah. Come alongside, give another avenue for that shepherding to happen, but it's not a replacement for it, right? And Jack, I would say it's just as hard to shepherd large churches as it is to be a member in a large church. Because I think being a member in a large church, that's something that I've never actually experienced, because the vast majority of churches that I've gone to are actually smaller. But from individuals that I've talked to and things that obviously that I've read and experiences I've heard from people, it's hard. It's hard being a member at a really large church because of how intentional you have to be to go out of your way to find community, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think at those points too, If we saw somebody new in our congregation on a Sunday, multiple pastors would have conversations with that, with those couples or those individuals that we saw, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's easy. It's easy to point out people to know who's new.
And I love
those conversations. Yeah. In bigger church contexts that I've been a part of, in order to be known, you have to serve. And I don't think that is a wise decision to make, because that basically forces you into trying to be known in spheres where it should come naturally. So, yeah, I don't like it when churches effectively, they probably wouldn't say this, but they effectively do it in the way that they're set up to where in order for you to be known, you need to serve.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, it shouldn't be that way. It should be, you should have a good enough combination of elders and leaders and members that I don't need to serve in order to be known.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shouldn't be that way. So that's, that's kind of one of my gripes, is my gripe as well to kind of add on to this, is that if you're culturally pushing for, well, the only way you're going to be known is if you serve, like that's a stipulatory kind of, like, you still have to kind of buy in.
Yeah.
Very still consumeristic kind of way of looking at the Lord's Day and your local church versus I go there and I fellowship.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, oh gosh. Yeah. It's super difficult, but yeah. Yeah, I don't, from my conversations in seminary, I don't think a lot of us came to the conclusion that effectively you cannot elder and disciple people. And, or at least there is no more discipleship culture in 1,000 plus more member churches. I mean, let's reduce it down even further. Like you could see that, even say that for 300 member churches, to be quite honest.
I think that's the hard thing, is like, I don't think there's particularly a line, because there's so many different, there's so many different details, but I would agree with you. I think my line is probably a lot lower than a lot of people's. Like, you know, when you start getting into the hundreds, you have to start asking yourself, like, okay, how are we shepherding effectively this amount of people? And are people falling through the cracks? Right? Because people will. You can't expect people, and I found this to be true, you can't expect people to come to you when they need help. Often there are individuals that you become aware of those things either by interaction or by someone telling you, and you have to seek them out, like shepherds do with sheep, right? Uh-huh. Sometimes you have to be the one to go seek the sheep out, right? And that gets very difficult when you have a flock of 200, 300, 400, 500 sheep, right? And I do think that when you get into the hundreds, I do think that you can mitigate that issue with more elders. I do think you can, right? You can have an elder team of, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys that all work together and split that work up. I think you can be effective, but there comes a point where that ability is just, it's just hindered. It's mm-hmm. it just is.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens when you have that many people, right? So what would you say is some solutions? Because we don't want to just be the negative Nancys here,
yeah.
right? Calling out the problem and not providing solutions. What are some solutions, Jack, to an elder team that's looking at a church and saying, you know, looking at their church and they're like, okay, we've got, you know, 400 people, right? It's getting hard to shepherd. We're seeing the effects of this many people in our congregation. And it's starting to cause problems, but they see the potential for issues to start rising up in terms of either, you know, counseling or general shepherding, soul care, right? Community life, whatever it be. What are some solutions that churches can do? And I've got some in my head, and I know you do too, that they can start to explore to mitigate the problems that come with a large church.
Yeah, I think one of them, so just even in the hundreds too, this is what we do right now. Usually our elders and deacons and community group leaders meet together and we talk through people who are of need of community to be plugged into the church.
That's really valuable. That's awesome.
So when you have that going for you, you can really track people especially if they are of a family.
Yeah. And that's a fantastic use of the deacon role too.
Yeah.
Right. Be like, hey, we've identified some people that need shepherding, that need help, and they bring that to the elders. Like that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So we have that kind of communication. So, you know, there. I think that that's important because if you have a high. Now, this is not causation equals correlation necessarily mm-hmm. that I'm saying, but when 80, I think it's 80 plus percent or more of our church is plugged into a community group.
Yeah.
That helps in ways of knowing that you have one. So my community group is kind of primarily made up of leaders. Mm-hmm. so we have one deacon. We have myself, who's a community group leader, and then we have another guy as well, too, who's been doing preaching and leads in other ways as well, too. So, and then we have so their wives and then two more couples as well in my community group. So, yeah, it's making more room for community groups to kind of have that to make sure nobody's falling through the cracks, because we have dealt with that to where we are tackling with that, in more effective ways,
yeah,
or at least trying to make space. So one part of it too, that was kind of interesting is we saw some seniors were kind of falling through the cracks. So more people in like the 55 plus year age group and above. Mm-hmm. So we started to implement kind of like a seniors community group on like Wednesday mornings. I think we started to do this and we started to see more participation that way as well too.
That's awesome.
So that people weren't going there, because you're going to have people fall through the cracks of every single age group.
Oh,
it's not
sure.
necessarily one particular age, but yeah, it's trying to find solutions to who can step up or who is moving into a different role in order to accommodate that. So a lot of the solutions that we have come up with are involving either, and sometimes it's even outside of just the programming as well too. I know guys who are doing their own thing, who have men's breakfasts at some other times other than what our local church does that mm-hmm. they participate in, and you still get participation there as well too.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, but I think to start off with, you have to have all your leaders come together and start figuring out like who knows who thinks that if we don't plug this couple in or this person in to community in some form or fashion, mm-hmm. that they're not going to be served well. So it's starting with that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your solution could be community groups. Your solution could be, you know, different ways in which your church studies the Bible. So we have a men's morning Bible study on Wednesday. We have a bi-weekly Sunday Bible study and fellowship time as well too. Mm-hmm. We have certain groups. So we have a youth group and a young adults group, which is interesting. So the youth group is like only goes until like high school. The young adults group is like basically like after high school up till like 35.
Okay.
Which that has been a really big help for a lot of people in our church. I have not seen that done effectively, and I'm thankful that one of the guys who's actually in my community group leads that with his wife, mm-hmm. because that has been a huge encouragement to a lot of singles kind of in that age range.
Yeah.
So there's that. But yeah, those are kind of basic solutions that I can think right up.
And I love starting there, because those are in-house practical solutions that you can start right now, mm-hmm. right? And that's where you should start, right? Is those in-house practical things that involve the congregation, involve the leadership, right? You're going to get to a point, if the Lord blesses the church and brings the numbers, where even those things become not as effective as they once were, right? So now you start getting into more, you could say, drastic or more big picture ways to start start solving that problem, right? And I can think of two main ones, right? Normally, and again, this isn't, again, across the board, I know it doesn't always work like this. Normally, with an influx of people comes an influx of resources, which is a blessing. That's a good thing, right? We praise the Lord for that. With those resources, you can do one of three things, and I see these as ways that you can start to mitigate the problem of growth within the local church. One we already covered: you can bring on more guys. You can bring on more guys that are on, you know, paid staff, if you will, whose job it is to care for the congregation in a pastoral way, right? That's one. Two, you can either move your building or expand your building, right? Again, big, like these are big things, but the primary thing you're making your decisions on, the reasons, is the care of the congregation, these things will fall under that, right? I think we have a problem in America with idolizing buildings, and having a building is like the end all be all of what it means to be a church, right? And the more we can break that, I think the better it is, right? So those things should be subject to the care of the congregation, right? You can move to a larger space, right? That meets the needs of the congregation, right? This one's probably my favorite one. You can plant.
Mm-hmm.
You can plant a church, right?
Yeah.
And the reason I like that is because it creates the of everything that it creates, right? You aren't just building for yourself kind of this empire, right? Where it's like, oh, okay, let's grow. We're growing as a church. Let's get a bigger space. Let's just keep, and then maybe, you know, maybe another campus. Maybe we can do that, right? And that's how these things tend to kind of balloon up. The reason I love planting so much is because it keeps the focus where it should be. And that is the care of the congregation and the proclamation of the gospel through another biblical local church, right? If the Lord brings that many people to your church and you're getting up to 300, 400, 500, man, you could at that moment, if you had a 500 person church, you could plant a self-sustaining local church right now in an area that needs a local church. And when I see churches make that decision, Jack, make the decision to plant because they're getting too big, and not just continue to amass this group of people, that is one of the most encouraging decisions that I see, because that tells me two things. They care for the lost, and they care for their congregation, because they want to see more local churches go out and preach the gospel to the community, and they care for their congregation enough to not make them the cattle that cattle on their hill and numbers on a page, right? Because they could just keep growing the church and raise the paychecks and do what, you know, corporate America churches do. But that decision, I think, it shows that their priorities are right, and it's always encouraging when I see that.
Yeah, that's what I would say. That's something that we're actively actually thinking about doing. Mm. I mean, we've talked about, that's primarily why we moved into the middle school that we did, is to try and have a way in which we can mitigate before we can possibly think of some other solutions.
Yeah.
And hopefully one of those, we've talked about it before, but one of those solutions is planning another church.
Yeah.
And what does that look like? I think we have enough people. There's enough people on the proverbially on the bench, so to say, too, that we could probably plant another church in our region, our immediate area. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's somewhat But also too, like, that's not the end all be all, because we did try right. that before I came here to this local church. They tried that and it was right before COVID and it did yeah. not work out.
Well, and that's, yeah, that's a horrible thing.
Because like, of COVID.
Yeah. You can't foresee that, right? That yeah. that's a bummer, but
yeah. we're actively trying to do that and trying to think of situations.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not like we're trying to get ahead of the problem, not get behind it.
Yep. Exactly.
I wouldn't say ahead of the problem, but I guess ahead of the demand versus yeah, behind
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Church growth isn't a problem. That's a yeah. praise the Lord. That's awesome. As long as you're not growing because you're, you know, you're seeker sensitive, right? And you're like, you're not, you know, I guess not all growth is good, right?
Yeah.
But good, solid biblical growth that happens because the people are hungry for the word and that's what they get. Praise the Lord for that. It's a great problem to have. But keep the care of the congregation as a primary and make decisions that increase the health of the local church, not detracts from it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I'm just of the camp and I'm not ashamed of it. Small church. I'm a fan of small church, man. Small church, I just think is better. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think it's more healthy. I think the community is sweeter. And yeah, I'm a fan of it. I really am.
It's always, and it takes less stress off of you to a certain effect.
It does. Oh yeah.
It's less stress and more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's assuming too, that you already have pipelines in your local church to build up local leaders and stuff yes. like that too.
Yep.
Because if yep. you're not doing that, then yeah, that's going to be a little
doing
bit
your
more
job.
Yeah, yeah. A little bit more difficult as well too. But yeah,
exactly. So. Well, hey, dude, good talk. Mm. Love that. FYI, Liquid Death.
Mm. I saw you crack that open.
The new flavor, bury it alive, BERRY. Not a sponsor, but delicious.
They have delicious cola too.
Sparkling water.
I saw they have cola now. I was about to just buy it off the shelves. I saw that at Safeway.
You should get it. We'll do a little we'll do a little taste review on the Podluck. So that's where we're going to go right now. We're going to go record some Podluck. But Jack, why don't you get us out of here, my friend?
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, if you appreciate Josh and I's conversation about the local church, about how to take care of members, how to build up your local congregations, what is the proverbial line stepper to planting a church or having too many?
Give me a line. I want a number.
Too many. I'm just thinking of that Dave Chappelle over Charlie Murphy's like, he's a proverbial line stepper. anyway, so if you appreciate our ramblings, our gallivants into the discussions of the local church, you can support us through the sociables, if you will. The Facebook, the Multiverse, the Instagram goes well with chocolate and marshmallow, or the sociable formerly known as Twitter X, all at the tag at Reformatory Pod. Drop us a direct message, drop us episode ideas, drop us questions, comments, concerns, anything along those lines. Josh, you can tell the lovely people how they might support us in our endeavor.
That's right. There's multiple ways you can support the Reformatory. Head on over to YouTube if you want to watch this as well as listen to it. You can see our ugly mugs and hit the like button while you're there. Maybe the subscribe. Hit the follow. Share it with a friend. We'd really appreciate that. You can rate and review this podcast on Apple and Spotify. We like that as well. Link in the description of this episode, of every episode, takes you to our Amazon store where we sell Reformed merch. It's pretty fun. Mm. New designs always in the works, and should be hopefully getting some more new designs up here before spring's over. Last but not least, we have a Podluck. Mm. It's a Patreon, but we call it the Podluck because it sounds like potluck. And Baptists love potlucks, so
it's true.
Shows you the extent of our humor. $5 a month. That's it. It's not even like a cappuccino at Starbucks these days. You could become a Patreon supporter, and if you do, our pledge to you is that your name shall be hallowed.
Hallowed, sir. Hallowed.
Hallowed through the halls of the podcast. That is our pledge to you. We're going to record the Podluck right now. You get multiple episodes. It's pretty fun. We thank you all for listening, and we will catch you next step of the Reformatory.